So finally, Travis Kelce's in my huddle though.
Okay.
And so I was just like, all right, Travis, you're going to run, you know, we're going to run that double stick play. And so I called the double stick.
Right.
And I said, hey, get to, you know, 7 yards, go a little deeper, turn around, I'm going to hit you with the ball. We're going to get the first down. I'm going to act like the headset went out and we're just going to move on.
And here we are. Guys Being Dudes, episode 13. Thank you guys for listening to Guys Being Dudes. You can find Guys Being Dudes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, if you're a visual learner, then YouTube. But Luke, 13 Tuesdays in a row. How is this Tuesday going for you, man?
13 in a row and 13 strong, baby. It's yes, a great sir. Tuesday. I cannot complain.
It's
a great
Tuesday, you know? Baby. It's another great Tuesday.
Yeah, seriously.
But hey, you know, today, guys, dudes, we've done it again. Guys Being Dudes continues to get it done week by week. We say this every single episode. We've been saying it, dude.
Fire
today,
us up.
We got the former NFL quarterback, Mr. Tyler Bray. Tyler, how is your day going, man?
It's good. Got a workout in with Pinelli, your guys' guest the other day.
Yeah, episode 12. Yeah,
he put me through a little grind today. It was good.
Yeah, got the legs working. Got your body going or what?
Oh, yeah. Legs were a little tired after our session.
Yeah. How do your legs, like, recover? Like, how old are you?
29.
29. Do your legs recover the same way they did when they were like 20, when you were 20?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Really?
Yeah. Just roll out a little bit and get some sleep.
Done. Yeah, that's freaking sick.
Did you stretch,
man,
a lot? Do a lot of stretching and stuff? Or?
Yeah, before. Yeah. Not afterwards. Not really, though.
Staying loose.
But, dude, so, I mean, we got a lot to talk about today. You came from a small town, Kingsburg, right? We were just talking about that before the podcast started. And personally, over the last few weeks, we've actually talked about how, and Greg mentioned it in episode 12, about recruiting, and or the Valley recruiting is kind of, it's not very good, right? It's hard to get recruited out of the Valley. And I think that's where we should start this podcast off, right here, episode 13. So I want to talk to you about, how did you get recruited out of the Valley? How did you go from a small town kid, right, growing up there, to playing in the SEC?
So At first I didn't think you had to go to camps.
Uh-huh.
And so I just thought, hey, if you played good, you know, the offers will come. Well, going into my senior year, hadn't really heard anything. So finally figured out, hey, you got to go to camp. So we started traveling to like USC, UCLA, and going to these bigger schools and trying to get noticed. And it actually worked.
Wow.
Now, was that going into your senior year? Or
yeah. So yeah, it was like the summer of my junior year going into my senior year.
Yeah. And would you say that paid off considering you guys had a 13-0 season?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, we in high school, we before the season, one of the news stations came out and started interviewing us about, you know, what our thoughts were on the season. And everyone on our team was like, we're going undefeated. We're going to win Valley. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, oh, you guys are, you know, cocky and all this. We're like, no, we just know we're that good. Like, we barely missed Valley the year before. We didn't play too well against Chowchilla. And then going into that next season, we were returning like 33 seniors or something like that.
Damn.
And we've been playing together since like the sixth grade. I think we lost 5 games going into that season from sixth grade on.
Gritty. You guys were just gritty together, huh?
We had some few additions over the years, but for the most part, it was the same like group, same core.
That's
and we
nice.
Just knew each other, knew what we were going to do, and just liked to have fun.
So what did you guys grew up all together? Like what's there to do out there in Kingsburg? Like do you have siblings?
I have 2 brothers, yeah.
Yeah, what did you guys do growing up?
So me and my brother, we actually grew up in Reedley up until I was in sixth grade. And so we were always, you know, playing basketball outside or throwing the football around, baseball. Basketball is my first sport. And so it was always basketball. Mm-hmm. My dad played basketball. My uncle played basketball. So it was always basketball, and football just kind of was something I did. Mm-hmm. I could throw the ball. And so I just always played quarterback. And we moved to Kingsburg. My first game in Pop Warner in Kingsburg, I was a wide receiver. And the guy ahead of me, he didn't have a bad game, but it just wasn't the greatest game.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next game I got to start. And then from there on out, I was a starter.
Wow. Wow. Did growing up in Kingsburg, or like in a small town, teach you anything? Like,
Yeah, it keeps you humble. So you see guys these days, there's a lot of them are very cocky. You know, they come from big cities, big schools, and everything's football, football, football. Well, Kingsburg, it's like that, but it's still, I mean, everybody's farmers out there.
Yeah.
So football's just kind of something you did on the side. You mm-hmm. either farmed or you played football, and sometimes both. And so, I mean, we would go out there and just have fun. It wasn't like we were you know, watching a bunch of film, breaking teams down, studying, doing all that. We would just go out, show up to practice, get practice over with, and, you know, get to Friday and play the game.
Yeah. See, I think the way the games changed over time is just totally different now. It's like, I think there needs to be more fun in it, dude. You know, like, now it's just so technical and so everything is just so precise, instead of just going out there, you know, going doing your thing, doing what you guys have to do to get better as a team collectively and then win a championship. All right. I mean, that brother bond that you mean, it must have been strong growing up together all those years playing together. Was playing at the next level always like a dream of yours? Did you know that early? Did you want to play in the NFL? Or how, like, playing in college, was that an interest in you?
Actually, like I said earlier, basketball. So I wanted to go on and play basketball at the next level.
Oh.
And it came down to, you know, my dad was saying, you know, you don't choose your sport, the sport chooses you. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting looked at for basketball, but it was a bunch of smaller schools. And finally, football started to kind of take off, and I got an offer from San Diego State, and then eventually Tennessee. And so when it came down to it, my dad's like, hey, you know, those are two big schools you can't really pass up. Like, you probably should do football. And I fell in love with football. It wasn't always my first love. It was kind of my second. But, I mean,
when did that switch flip?
Started my senior year. When I started getting recruited, I went to a few USC camps, Stanford, UCLA, and started seeing these guys that were already 5-star, 4-star, whatever they were, and I was competing with them. And I was better than some of them, and some of them were better than me, and I wanted to be better than everyone in my class. And that kind of drove me to continue with football. Because basketball, I mean, there's a lot of guys that can shoot the ball, but they're a lot faster than me. I'm very slow. Not as athletic as most of the guys that are in basketball, but football, I'm, you know, bigger, stronger, and semi-fast, so it helps. But it was just better for me in football.
Hmm. Wow. I just can't picture growing up wanting to play basketball at the next level, and then your senior year, you know, you're 18 years old, like, changing sports. That mind boggles me.
I was actually 17 at the time.
Dude.
I was 17 when I went into college.
Wow.
That is crazy. I guess it's kind of like when all that's going on. I mean, they had such a good year, right? Yeah. He had a good year himself. Then he's getting recruited. Like, it's kind of like, okay, this is what being a quarterback kind of is like, you know? And so that's kind of where you, like you said, kind of fell in love, right? You're like, all right, if this is what it's like, I could like this more than maybe basketball. So I guess it's...
How did you set yourself apart from other quarterbacks? Like, back, like, you just... Because I feel like you're showing up to these camps, you know, not knowing that you truly want to play football that bad. You know, it's kind of, you're indecisive at this time. Like, how did you set yourself apart from the quarterbacks that have been doing it for years on, have had the training, and how did you go show up and do your thing?
Being 6'6" helped.
Yeah.
And I had a stronger arm than basically everybody in my class. And so I was showing up to these camps and was throwing the ball a lot better than a lot of these guys. Their footwork might have been better because they had a QB coach since the time they can walk.
Right.
And I mean, my QB coach in high school was the only guy I worked with. I didn't have another QB coach. I wasn't, you know, going and paying money like for a guy like Greg and getting training like that. And so I showed up to these camps and I was like, wow, I'm, you know, just as good or not better than these guys. And I have little to none training. I was like, I can only get better from here, where some of these guys are kind of already peaking. Like, hit their peak.
Yeah. Right.
Hmm. How did you get exposure to Tennessee, though? That's an SEC school.
So I did the Elite 11 camp.
Okay.
I went to the one in Vegas. It was like the qualifier. It was like their final one. Flew out there and actually got the bid from there to go to the finals.
Oh, wow.
So we went down to Southern California, and it was a little different than what they do now.
Uh-huh.
I think now is a little more of a TV thing. It's not as much football as the one I went to. And so I went down there. I think San Diego State was my only offer. I was like the last guy when we started the camp. And I think 2 days in, 3 days into it, Bob Johnson, who was running it back then, hands me a cell phone and goes, hey, go into this van. I need you to talk to somebody. And I was like, go into the van. He's like, it's not legal what's going down, I think. He goes, I think you need to be away from everybody so no one really knows what's going on. I was like, okay. So I grabbed the phone, went to the van, and it was Lane Kiffin on the phone. I'd never spoken to Tennessee, never even thought about Tennessee.
They weren't even a thought in your mind.
No.
At all.
Yeah. No, I was hoping to go to Fresno State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As most people probably do, coming especially out of the Valley, like their only thing that they think about is Fresno State. Like, I could get to Fresno State, but
it was close to home. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And so I go on this van. Lane Kiffin's on the phone. He's like, "Hey, Bob Johnson said you're, you know, a good quarterback. We'd like to offer you a scholarship." Never seen me throw in person. Never seen anything. Maybe watched a highlight film or something, but never really seen me play. And offered me a scholarship during the camp. And he goes, "Hey, but you can't tell anybody until you get home." And I'm like, "Okay, that's fine with me." So didn't really tell anybody. Obviously told my parents, so they are excited, and just told them, you know, you got to keep it on the hush. And then when I got home, kind of made it known that I got an offer from Tennessee.
Now, how legal was what you just said? Like, was that legal for you to say right now on the podcast?
I mean, I got in trouble for accepting money in college, so.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it is what it is.
Wait, you did what?
I think we're good.
No, we're good. Good. Wait, you got money in college? You got in trouble for that?
Yeah, I mean, after I was already in the NFL.
Yeah, but what happened?
So I started taking money from an advisor in college, and was, you know, it wasn't like some of the guys you see where they're buying necklaces, cars. Yeah. It wasn't a huge lump sum of money. Like, I was just taking it here and there. I was giving it to guys on the team that, you know, didn't really come from much. I was paying receivers' phone bills. I was doing this. I was doing that. Paying for diapers for guys on the team. So it wasn't something I was going out blowing, you know, wads of money at the bar or stuff like that. I just was getting money for food and for other guys on the team. And the NCAA came back. I think compliance at Tennessee called me when I was with the Chiefs. And they're like, "Hey," it broke on ESPN. They're like, "Hey, we want to talk to you about the money you took in college." And I just kind of laughed and was like, "Go talk to my agent," basically. My agent calls me. He's like, "Hey, what are you thinking about this?" I was like, "Can they do anything?" And he goes, "No." And I was like, "All right, then. Tell them have a good day." Wow. Because at that point, I mean, what are you going to...
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like we won any national championships when I was in school. I mean, I don't even know if we had a winning record when I was in school. So it wasn't like, you know, we were getting paid a bunch of money going out there and blowing out Alabama. I mean, I was just getting money to help guys on the team and, you know, pull money in my pocket for food and stuff like that.
I know a main topic in the sports world, well, before this whole last year with the way college athletes can be getting paid now, but before that happened, there was a lot of talk on college athletes getting paid. So are you a prime example of that being true?
I think I'm a small example. There's guys that were getting paid a lot.
Really?
They're getting, I know guys got offered a lot. I know guys were getting paid a lot.
Wow.
Just to sign at schools.
Well, I mean, if Nick Saban, he's got at Alabama, he gives him his trucks and stuff because he's got a dealership. Yeah. So he just uses that as a write off. He just says, "Yeah, drive it till the end of the season."
But like physical cash.
No, I know what you're saying, but dude, that's still driving a brand new whip like that. But
I mean, it makes it also better that you were doing good with it. You know what I mean? Like, you were going out there and doing good for your team. And I'm sure, like, it made your guys' bond as a team even closer. The fact that, you know, the quarterback, your starting quarterback, you're going out there doing these types of deeds for your boys. I'm sure that helped a little bit, did it?
Yeah. I mean, one of my receivers called me one day and he goes, "Hey," because I told a bunch of the guys on the team, like, "Hey, if you need anything, let me know."
Uh huh.
So he called me one day. He goes, "Hey, I have this phone bill." He goes, "My mom can't pay it. Single parent home." He goes, "My mom can't pay it. She's not going to be able to. Can you help me out?" I said, "Yeah, sure. Just let me know how much." So he told me how much. Went and picked him up. Took him to the, it was like AT&T or something. And we paid his phone bill.
Wow. That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
That means you got a good heart right there.
I mean, I was doing something wrong and trying to make it right.
Did you know that it was wrong? Did you feel
wrong? I knew it was wrong the whole time.
Really?
Athletes should have been getting paid a long time ago.
They should have been getting paid a long time
ago? I mean, the NCAA is making so much money off these players. The schools are making so much money off these players. I mean, they're selling jerseys with your number on it. It doesn't have your last name on it.
But it has your
number. But it's not number. Like you're going in the store and going, "Oh, let me get some random number 8 jersey."
No.
Like, no. They have all the players that are on the team. they have their jerseys with the number.
Yeah.
Everybody knows whose it is, and people are wearing the stadiums. Now, it's do I see any of that money?
100,000 fans, too.
I mean, yeah. I mean, 103,000 people fill Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, everybody's wearing
I'm not seeing a penny of that. And they can say, you know, your scholarship, all that. But, I mean, is it really, at the end of the day, that's pennies to them?
Yeah, exactly. It really is.
Because I'm sure those tickets aren't. What's how much does a SEC football game cost to go to? Do you know by chance? You
I got them for no, free. I have no clue.
Yeah, I'm sure you got
them for free. I mean, I looked up Fresno State. It's not talking crap on Fresno State, but I looked up to go to the UConn game this weekend, and seats were $30 to $40.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's got to be 100, 200 plus.
Dude, and that's every Saturday, too.
Yeah.
And they're packed, too.
I know. What made you choose to go to Tennessee? What was that overall decision maker?
So I originally committed to San Diego State to Al Borges, who was the OC QB coach at the time. Brady Hoke was the head coach. And I had told them, like, hey, I'm just getting, you know, started with the recruiting process. I'll commit to you guys. You guys are the, you know, the school I'd like to go to. I went and visited, took a tour, and loved it down there. And I was like, I'm committed to you guys, but if there is a school that offers me that I cannot refuse, I said, I'm going to have to take that. I said, I will call you and let you know. I said, I'm not just going to all of a sudden decommit and commit to this other school without telling you. Like, I'll be a man about it. I'll call you and explain what's going on. And so when I got the Tennessee offer, I called the coach. As soon as I got him on the phone, hey, we saw you got the Tennessee offer. Like, what can we do to keep you here? Like, all this. And I'm just like, hey, coach, like, when we first talked, I told you if there was a school I couldn't refuse, I would have to take. And Tennessee, I said, obviously, I said, you can't tell me that's not a school I can't refuse.
Yeah, no doubt.
How did he react to you telling him that you were going to tell him straight up?
I mean, he wasn't happy about it at the end of the day because now they got to start recruiting more.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's he understood.
Do you think you get away with that in today's age?
Well, you see guys all the time committing, decommitting. It's like, what's the new flavor of the day?
I know. Dude, no, it's incredible. And it's in all sports, too. It's in all sports. Like, a guy commits his freshman, sophomore year. Like, odds are he's not going to that school.
No.
Yeah. He's going to commit. He's going to decommit and commit somewhere else. It's like a game now. Mm-hmm. It's like, you got to just play that part. And especially here in the Valley, too. It happens a lot in all sports and all the athletes in the Valley.
Because I've talked to couple guys that have, you know, done that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, just wait it out. I was like, the offers are going to keep rolling in. Once, you know, this school offers you, other schools in the division are going to try to offer you too because they see you as a commodity now.
Yep.
They see, oh, this school wants him. Okay, now he must be good. We need to go get him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a carousel of offers will just start rolling into these guys. But they get that first big offer and they're like, oh, I got to commit. Oh, I got to commit. Oh, now I got another one. Okay, I'm going to decommit and commit to this guy.
What happens though? Let's say it's your sophomore season. Okay, you get a scholarship and it pays for your whole school, right? All your schooling, full ride, and you wait it out, right? And then junior year comes, it starts decreasing because you're waiting too long. What happens in that scenario? Do you take that full ride instantly?
No, I think if it's starting to decrease, that means your playing's decreasing too. Mm. So your level that you were playing at that they saw, oh, this guy's going to be, you know, the next big thing, and all of a sudden it's not happening, there's a reason they're not offering anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of the time it's for injuries. So you'll see a guy that commits his junior year and he tears his ACL or gets a broken hand, whatever it is. And now the school's like, hey, we don't really know. We're going to pull our offer from you, or we're going to wait and see what happens, but we might go another direction. So it's mostly based off injury and stuff like that.
I wonder how those types of phone calls go when a coach calls you and say that they're going to pull their offer away.
I'm sure they just call you straight up and tell you just like,
hey. I mean, they don't care about your feelings.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They don't.
They get their feelings hurt or act like they do when you say, hey, I'm decommitting.
Yeah, when you're decommitting.
But when they find the next and best thing, they don't really care.
They don't remember you at all.
No, you're a business transaction.
Call, yeah, and it's next step.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a business. It's my bad. So you commit to Tennessee, and from what it looks like is you started the season. You weren't the starter at the beginning of your freshman season, correct?
No, so backtrack a little bit. Get to Tennessee. I graduated high school early.
Okay. Whoa. What, like early in age or like early, like a semester?
A semester early.
Okay.
So you can like enroll early at colleges now. And so I did that. They wanted me to get in early. They're like, hey, we're going to start you as a freshman, and we need you to come in early so you start learning the offense. So I'm like, cool. So I set up with all my grades, got all my transcripts set up in high school to graduate early, did it, enrolled early. And then they're doing the Chick-fil-A Bowl at the time, I think. And they finished it out. I think they lost to Virginia Tech. And shortly after, we see on the ESPN ticker that Lane Kiffin's up for the USC job. So we call the Coach Ogeron, who's a D-line coach at the time. We're like, hey, what's going on with this? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to be here for you guys. We're gonna be here. You'll be fine. Sure enough, 10 minutes later, we get up to our room, and Lane Kiffin takes the USC job. We go to call back the phone. Been disconnected already.
Yeah.
No way.
Started out as a joke. We were playing on one of the D linemen saying, oh, hey, the coaches are leaving. He got all like worried and was like, no, they're not. Let me call him. I'm going to call him and put him on speaker. We're sitting in Gibbs Hall, which is the freshman dorm at the time for athletes. And he was like, no, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. Calls them. They tell us no. Get up to the room. Sure enough. Damn. And then they call us back, all the freshmen that they had enroll early, and try to get us to go to USC. So Ogeron calls me back and is like, hey, we'd like to offer you a scholarship to USC.
Can they do that? If you're already there?
Yes, because they left. And but I think at the time, yeah, but I think at the time you could, if your head coach leaves, I think you can go with them. Or there's some rule where you can leave and not have to sit out.
We've just seen that happen in baseball, in college baseball. We just seen that happen Arizona and LSU.
Yeah.
Right? The head coach, right?
Not the same thing, but similar.
Similar. Yeah. So, wow. So in college, players can follow the head coach if
it's something like that. Or they can transfer without having to sit out a year.
So you just, but you up and said, no, I'm already here.
Well, people there kind of told us, hey, you've already like been to classes and all this. Like, you can't really leave. And so being 17 at the time, you have no clue. You just trust what they're telling you.
And you don't want to get in trouble either, right?
You don't want to have to sit out a year. You don't want to do all that because they just promised you that you're, you know, going to start as a freshman. You're going to be with us for 4 years and all this. And next thing you know, they're leaving and they're calling you and being like, hey, come to USC. And I'm like, why would I come to USC? You guys literally just had me and my family move out to Tennessee, promised all these things about, you know, we're going to be here for 4 years. You're going to start 4 years. All this, and then you just up and leave. No warning, no nothing. Just, hey, we're going to stay, and nope, bye.
Wow. That's like, dude, you put so much trust into a coach. Like, I mean, dude, especially when, you know, you're in high school, and committing is like a big deal to you, right? Like, it's a very exciting time, a very exciting moment in your life, right? And then you look at that head coach that's going to be your coach for the next few years, and you look at him as this like role model in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that he just up and leaves, it's like, whoa, your trust just completely just kind of shatters. And I guarantee you, probably the next coach who kind of always or continue on with your career, I bet you would always feel like, dude, like this coach could just up and at it, just go whenever he wants. One little big money deal, gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it works.
That's all it takes, money.
Yeah, or you don't have the year you're supposed to have, and you know some booster pays to have your contract, you know, bought out, and you're gone.
Wow. So, dude, there's much deeper things going on that I've ever thought.
So, what were you thinking about after once that all happened? I mean, once you told him, no, I'm going to stay here. Like, was it kind of like, did you sit and think, like, all right, should I stay here or should I just go back home and get my things going? Because, I mean, right, you guys didn't know who the next coach was or anything.
No clue. My family had moved out.
Oh, wow.
Because when I went on my visit, I mean, we're sitting in Kiffin's office, and he's saying all these promises with my parents and brother sitting there.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like you hear all that, and then all of a sudden you get the rug pulled out from under you. I just remember sitting in my dorm with a bunch of the other guys, and we're just like, what do we do? Like, are you guys staying here? Like, what's the plan? And so we kind of all at the end of the day thought we couldn't leave. And so we're like, hey, we'll just roll with it. And so, I mean, there's nothing you really could do at the time. Mm-hmm.
But you ended up staying, correct? Mm-hmm. And you eventually, beginning of the season, middle of the season, you started getting into the games more. You were leaving the games late. And then against South Carolina, you had your first start? Or Memphis?
Memphis. So I got a bunch of playing time versus South Carolina. Matt Sims was a junior, a redshirt junior, something like that, a JUCO transfer. He came in. He was
a quarterback, the starting quarterback.
Yes, he came in at the same time as me. We were both the same recruiting class for Tennessee. And he was named the starter. I was still trying to learn the offense, and he had been in a few offenses. He was very football smart. And at the time, I wasn't at all. I just went out and played. So he beat me out for the spot, played, and it's not like he was having a terrible year, but, I mean, we weren't winning. And if in Tennessee and the SEC, if you're not winning, like, the next guy's up.
Yeah.
And so the end of the South Carolina game, I came in, and first pass, I throw a slant route. Number 98, I think it was, his last name is Taylor, D end, drops in coverage, and I just dot him right in the chest for a pick six. And I'm like, oh crap, here we go. Like, you're in the trenches now. What are you going to do?
It was your first opportunity, and you felt like you just blew it, huh?
Well, it was my first, like, significant playing time. Like, I came in versus Alabama at the end, and they were mollywhopping us, and I was getting my, you know, head kicked in by their, you know, 12 first-round picks on defense. Dude. And so South Carolina was my first true test, and we, like, came back and made it a close game at the end. We ended up losing, but it was a close game. And so we had to win the next five games to be bowl eligible. Mm-hmm. And so the first one was Memphis, and put up insane numbers that game.
Yeah,
we just had a great offensive night and put up insane numbers and ended up winning the next five games in a row and making it to a bowl game. It ended up being the Music City Bowl in Nashville. So that was pretty cool.
That is pretty
cool. What was that like? Having, you know, close to home, having everybody show up and the atmosphere?
Oh, it was insane. I mean, they packed the stadium out. It was all orange. I mean, it was a beautiful sight that night. We didn't win. That's
pretty cool.
It was kind of a... felt like we kind of got cheated because of rules, but...
How so?
So that 10-second runoff rule that they have now was... one of the reasons was because of that game. So they ran their field goal team on at the end to try to kick a game-tying field goal. And they had too many men or something like that, false start or something. And the guy misses the kick. We rush the field. We're celebrating. Think the game's over. Well, there's a penalty. And so they redo the down. And the guy goes up and nails it. And we go into overtime. And I think we went back and forth like three or four times. I ended up throwing a pick. Dumb pick. Shouldn't have thrown it. Saw the guy and just thought I could fit it in there. And he ends up picking it. And we lose the game.
Wow.
So I went from, you know, freshman year winning five games in a row, making it to a bowl game and thinking I won the bowl game, to throwing an interception and losing the bowl. And it was kind of, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine how you felt in that moment. But that Memphis game, you just mentioned that you put up ridiculous numbers. You actually hold the record at Tennessee for the most yards with 308 yards and five touchdowns in a single half. That game that you set.
Oh, damn. Didn't even know that.
Yeah. That's pretty dope. And you set, you know how many other records you have?
No. My roommate at the time, Mike Graninetti, would know all those if I texted him, but no, I have no clue.
You know that you broke Peyton Manning's records at Tennessee? He held two.
I know, and I
you,
broke a couple
held,
of them.
He holds more, but you've broken like several records at Tennessee. You had the most yards in a game.
Yep.
Which was, do you know what it was?
I don't know what game, but it was 530 yards.
It was against Cincinnati, your junior season, the Bearcats.
Was it Cincinnati or was it Troy?
Troy Trojans.
The only reason I know it was game? Troy was because they tweeted something out this past season or something about that.
Really? They tweeted back? Wait, what year was this?
Tennessee tweeted something because one of their quarterbacks, I think, threw for a ton of yards.
Uh-huh.
And or somebody in the SEC threw for a ton of yards, and it was up there, and I was like in the top 10 or something like that for yards in a game.
You threw 530 yards in a game. You beat Peyton Manning's record, which was 523 yards in a single game. The Peyton Manning, meanwhile, the one that just got into the Hall of Fame like literally 3 weeks ago. How does that feel? I mean, you have two records over Peyton Manning, dude.
Yeah, but I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's his college stats. I wanted those NFL stats. Yeah, he had way more wins too. That was one of the biggest things in college was, you know, we were putting up numbers as an offense, but you know, we weren't winning games. So I think we finished with like the second highest rated offense in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And had like a 5-7 record or whatever it was.
What was the reasoning? Defense?
Ton of things.
Ton of things just overall. Yeah.
So after that loss, did you kind of have a little chip on your shoulder? Like, all right, next season, let's go get this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we had got some good talent on offense. I mean, we had, at one point, our offensive line was starting in the league. We had two receivers that were starting in the league. We had a tight end that was starting in the league. And we were losing ball games. So you had a bunch of guys that were playing in the league, and we were still losing. So it's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
Was it tough being a quarterback in that big of a stage and just losing? Because nobody likes to lose, especially in that packed house every single week. Like, losing probably did not feel good.
Yeah, they let you know it, too.
How so?
So, I mean, you hear the rumbling. So social media is big, obviously. So you get on social media and you're just getting hounded from, you know, everybody who thinks they're a, you know, football expert. Yeah. And
Greg,
so
Greg just mentioned that this last week in episode 12. He goes, quarterbacks are humans. You got to remember that, too. And at the end of the day, they're not going to be Superman.
Yeah. You can only do so much. You can only, you know, worry about what you can control. And obviously we weren't winning, and we already know that. So we're already down on ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're already kicking ourselves and doing all that. And then you get on social media just to see what's going on in the world. And you have Bill over here talking about you suck and, you know, giving you threats on stuff. Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, what are you doing? Like, right. What are you doing to help this football team win?
Exactly.
You're not doing anything. So it's tough. But I mean, hey, we're playing for the fans, so you got to take the good and the bad.
Yeah, I feel that. Do you remember, there's a specific game that I want to bring up, junior season against Vanderbilt. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the game that you were pulled late in the game, and the next day, or after the game, your coach was fired.
Yes.
Was he fired because of his decision in pulling you?
I don't know. We had bumped heads on a lot of things when I was in college. I was kind of not an asshole, but I was kind of one, and wasn't very respectful towards him as a coach, which I should have been. Now, looking back at it, I should have been more respectful. But we had bumped heads, and he had told me at one point, like, hey, we might pull you. And I think I responded with, well, pull me then and see what happens.
Oh.
I was already having a bad game. We weren't playing well. The fans were sitting behind us just heckling us, and I'd had enough. I was tired of losing. I was tired of a bunch of the stuff going on, and I finally said, you know, pull me. See how it goes. And so he pulls me, and we ended up not playing well. I think he might even put me back in. Don't know. I was so kind of blacked out mad at that point.
Yeah.
And so we had said some stuff going into the tunnel, and I had made a couple of remarks to him in front of, you know, coaches, teams, and, you know, support staff, boosters, stuff like that. And before we got on the bus to go home, I think he was fired.
Wow.
I don't think it had anything to do with me. I mean, Tennessee should never lose to Vanderbilt.
No.
We kind of joke, it's a sister school of Tennessee.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we should never lose to them. We're a bigger school. We have more pool when it comes to recruits. School,
yeah.
Yeah. You should never lose to them, and we got, you know, our asses drug in the mud. And so a lot of people weren't happy, and, you know, I kind of feel bad for the stuff I said, but, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he got fired and went on to coach in the NFL, and I think he's still coaching the NFL or Missouri or something like that.
I think Missouri.
Yeah. Is he the OC at Missouri?
I think he's the OC at Missouri.
So, yeah, he's still in football. His dad's a legendary coach. I mean, he knows his stuff.
Derek Dooley, right?
Yeah, Derek Dooley. Mm-hmm. And I was just a young kid with a lot of anger built up towards him because, you know, I'd come in with trying to play for Lane Kiffin.
Right.
Who was an offensive genius when it comes to play calling and stuff like that. I mean, the guy, as long as he's, you know, he's the OC, he's wicked with the play calls.
Yeah.
And so coming in, and you think, hey, this could be your coach, and all of a sudden, it's a guy you've was at Louisiana Tech, and you're like, okay, what's going on? What's Tennessee doing? What are we trying to prove here? And looking back at it, I probably should have just, you know, rolled with the punches and try to make the best of it instead of trying to, you know, fight and riot with everybody. And it didn't pay off.
He actually has a similar situation. Your junior season.
What?
In high school, baseball. Right? Or no, was it your senior season? No, junior what? Season with the coach, your one head coach leaving, and then you have another head coach middle of the season. Dramatically, it's like, yo, like,
oh yeah,
like that same feeling of like, yo, like, I want to play for the other guy.
It's almost, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So it's almost like you didn't really give him a chance, even though, like, in a sense, you know, maybe you should have, right? But you just kind of, because you were so, I'm going to go play for Lane Kiffin, right? You wanted that. And then all this happened, you just kind of, it was just salty towards him. That's what you're saying. I kind of felt the same thing. Yeah.
It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you think it's a little snowball, you're all happy, everything, and all of a sudden, you know, shit's the fan, starts rolling downhill.
And you start getting bigger,
bigger. Yep. Start doing the blame game, and instead of just, you know, pulling up your bootstraps and making the best of it, you point the finger and it just snowball effect. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
Up to the point now, you're there and everything, you're experienced. How much did you learn from just the small town now being at that big SEC school? Like, just, and I know you still haven't even finished learning, but just to that moment now, how much have you grown and learned and understood the game of what being a quarterback really was?
Oh, I went for, I mean, high school, I literally could not draw up defenses. Like, I remember going to the Elite 11 camp, and they get us on the board, and I'm sitting in the back, and I'm like, oh, shit, like, what's going on? And they literally have guys up there, okay, draw me a cover 2 beater, draw me a cover 3 beater. And I'm like, what are these? Like, what are those type of moment? And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like sitting there copying like what they're writing down. I'm like, okay, that's cover 2 beater. Okay, that's cover 3 man beater. Okay, that's good to know. And so they finally call me, and I just kind of redid what the guy in front of me said. Just like verbatim, like copied everything. And that's how I kind of thought it was. Like, I was like, oh, I can just go out there and let the talent take over and I'll be okay. Going into college, kind of the same thing. Like, didn't put the hours I probably needed to put in to be a great quarterback. I just was getting by with, okay, I know what they're going to do.
Right.
Like, I can see it and I know what's going on. But to actually get up on a whiteboard and draw it up and be able to explain it and teach it to somebody, I couldn't do that at the time. Yeah, going into about season 2 or 3 in the NFL, I finally started to realize kind of, if I don't have this down, I'm not going to be here long. And so it got to the point where I would have my wife sit there and we would do a memory game the night before a game, and we would get the call sheet and it'd be blank. You'd have the play,
right?
And you'd have the personnel, but you had to know the formation. So the formation part would be blank and you go and fill it in and do all that. But I would have my wife with the actual play sheet during the week go through, and she would read off the play and would read off the personnel, and I'd have to tell her what it was. And so she actually started to learn, not totally learn the offense, but she kind of knew some of the play calls. So I remember she would be spelling stuff out. It would be like double stick, but it'd be spelled out DBLSTK. And she'd be like, okay, you got, you know, whatever, DBLSTK. And I'd be like, double stick. She'd be like, okay. And by the end of it, she'd be like, all right, you know, 322 scat, double stick. And I'd be like, okay, I got you.
You're just like, whoa, like, what just happened?
And so by the end of it, she was getting good at the play calls, and I was getting better, and it was kind of a fun game we did.
That's cool.
That is fun.
But I had to turn it into a game because I always looked at it as kind of a
hassle work.
It's busy work. Yeah. Like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to call the play in the headset, and I'm just going to, you know, repeat it to the team, and I'll just know what's going on.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you get in the game, and it's kind of like I remember one of the preseason games. I don't remember who it was against. But Doug Peterson was the OC at the time, and he called in a play, and I like just froze. Like, some of it was like skipping out, couldn't hear all of it, break the huddle, we're lined up wrong, Coach Reed calls a timeout, has me come over, choose me out. I go back out, he goes to call the same play. Still don't understand the play. Like, just couldn't spit it out. So finally, Travis Kelce's in my huddle, though.
Okay.
And so I was just like, all right, Travis, you're going to run, you know, we're going to run that double stick play. And so I called the double stick.
Right.
And I said, hey, get to, you know, 7 yards, go a little deeper, turn around. I'm going to hit you with the ball. We're going to get the first down. I'm going to act like the headset went out and we're just going to move on. Ready? Break. Sure enough, he runs his route, gets open. I hit him. We get the first down. And I was just like, hey, headset type of deal. Cause I mean, the headset goes out.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So that's why you got to know the formations to the plays, because they'll call in it. Some guys called him play first, then formation, or formation, then play. And so he was calling it a play and then formation. Well, it was screwing me up. And so I just got through that. Finally told the coach, like, hey, can you give it to me this way? It's a little easier for me to do. But I just remember sitting there just being like, all right, ready, break. We're going to make this work. I'm just going to throw it hard into his chest, and hopefully he catches it and we move on.
Yeah.
So I get to the sideline after that, and they're like, what did you call? And I was like, the headset went out, so I called double stick. I said, I know that play. I know we could have got the first down with it, so I called double stick. And he's like, okay.
Worked out.
And just moved on with it. Like, nothing ever really happened.
Wow. Let's backpedal a couple steps. You, after that junior season, you went for the draft, right? You declared for the draft?
Did the combine. Okay. So Dooley gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
They bring on Butch Jones. And I go and have a meeting with him, kind of ask him, hey, are you keeping any of the offensive staff on? What kind of plays you're going to be running? And he said no to the bringing anybody back on staff. So I was kind of like, okay, I already got the rug pulled on me once. This is kind of a second time with nobody from – because I had my offensive coordinator from Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
Jim Chaney. So I had him. He recruited me and did all that. So I had him the whole time. And all of a sudden, going into my senior year, I'm going to have a whole new staff – whole new offense. Yeah. And it was more of the, you know, the read offense and doing all that running. And I'm like, I can do that, but do I really want to be running the ball?
Yeah. No.
Like, that's not my game. Like, I can do it, but that's not where I want to be. I want to sit in the pocket and throw the ball.
Yep.
If I got a scramble move, yeah, I can do that, but I want to sit in the pocket and throw it. And so he tells me kind of no and no. And so I was like, hey, coach, it was nice to meet you, but I think I'm done here. And a bunch of my receivers and, you know, tight end and offensive linemen, I think, are leaving. The offensive linemen ended up staying, but the receivers all left. And so I was like, yeah, I'm done here. And so I went and talked to one of the guys, and they do your draft grade. And he's like, hey, your draft grade comes back, you're going to be like a third round guy. I was like, okay, I'm cool with that. I just want, you know, get drafted, just be on a team.
Yeah.
I just want to be in a building. And so I get to the combine and all my questions are about off the field issues. I had done some stuff in college, you know, wasn't the smartest thing. And so, had a bunch of off the field issues and ended up going undrafted. So I do the combine, do all that, hoping to hear from, I think, the Steelers I met with in Tennessee, and they were talking about, you know, we'll probably take you in the draft, do all that. And I was like, cool. Like, just get me in the building. Just doesn't matter who. Yeah.
Yeah.
And day one of the draft goes by, nothing, which I kind of expected. Day two, day three, day four goes by, nothing.
What round would day four be in typically?
It's like the sixth and seventh, yeah, I think.
Six, okay.
And we're at my house and we had a draft party for the whole draft.
Mm-hmm.
So the final day, I'm kind of sitting there and phone hasn't buzzed once. And I kind of have like a panic attack / food allergy attack. End up going to the hospital. Like, broke out in hives, like throat swells up.
Oh, wow.
Like, think I'm going to die type of thing. Wasn't that serious. So I go to the hospital. They hit me with an EpiPen. Back to normal. Go back to the draft party. And I'm just sitting there, still nothing. So I'm like, oh, crap. Like, I'm done.
I love how he just tells a story. Yeah. Just went to the hospital. Yeah, comes right back.
That's the first thing that thought in my mind. I'm like, wait, you went to the hospital and then back and continue to watch the draft?
Well, they hit me with an EpiPen.
Yeah.
So like, it's not like I'm going home and going to sleep.
No, right, yeah.
I mean, this is a shot of adrenaline. Like, I was amped. I was like a very sad and depressed amped. Like, that's not good to just go home and do nothing with.
Yeah.
And so I just continued to, you know, party and watch the draft and didn't hear anything. So my agents call me the next day and they're like, hey, this team, and this team want to bring you in. What do you think? And I'm like, I mean, this is what I pay you guys for. Like, what do you think? Like, I'm not even 20. I'm thinking I'm 20 at the time. I'm like, I mean, I'm not old enough to do anything. Like, you guys kind of tell me. So they're like, I think it was Miami and Jacksonville and Kansas City. And they're like, with your pass and all that, we don't think Miami's a good fit. I was like, okay, I probably agree with that. They're like, Jacksonville, we don't know with their organization. He's like, but Kansas City, like, we know Andy Reid. Like, we think that would be a great fit for you. And so I was like, sure, sign me up. Wherever I can go. So I ended up going to Kansas City, and it was their first year there. And it was me, Ricky Stanzi, Alex Smith, and Chase Daniel are in the quarterback room that year.
Wow. Wow. How was it to be behind Alex Smith? I'm sure you learned a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That, I mean, great dude.
Yeah.
He's probably one of my favorite teammates.
Well, dude, I mean, his story is remarkable. I'm sure he's a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
He's just a normal dude. Dude's made, you know.
And he seems hundreds, so humble, too.
Hundreds of millions, and you would never know.
Never know. Yeah.
He could just walk and right past you on the street, too. That just, dude, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Rocks a t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops.
They were playing the Ravens, huh? It was 2018? Ravens went out.
Texans.
Yeah, it was Houston. Yeah. Dude, that was
terrible.
Bad. Yeah, that was really, really bad.
Yeah, it brings tears to your eyes, like, thinking about that. Like, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, hearing, like, all the stuff he went through and...
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, almost losing his life.
Yeah.
Almost lost his leg. Like, stuff like that on a football field.
It's unbelievable. Like,
that's crazy.
Right.
And you think maybe, like, a neck injury, like, stuff like that, a serious thing. But just, like, a leg injury, you would never think anything like that.
Seriously. Dude, and the casting that he was in was... That was not pretty looking.
Did you see the trophy they made out of it?
Yeah, dude. Did you see that too?
Nah.
Oh, I got to put it up on the screen right now. I'm going to show you right after. I've seen that.
They took his the contraption his leg was in,
yeah.
And his wife had it made into a trophy.
That's sick.
It's a pretty cool trophy.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty neat. But were your agents right? Like, was Andy Reid a good fit for you?
It was the best place I could have been in.
Yeah, honestly.
Because you had Andy Reid. You had Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl mm-hmm. as a head coach. You have Matt Nagy, who's now the head coach of the Bears.
Yep.
You have all those, you know, offensive minds all in the same room teaching you. So I was doing extra stuff with Matt Nagy when he was still a QB coach, just trying to learn football. Because John Dorsey, the GM at the time, goes, he would every day he would come in and he'd show me a picture of Ryan Leaf and Tom Brady. And he'd go, which one do you want to be?
Who did you choose?
Tom Brady.
Of course. Okay.
And so he would show me that every day, and he would just be on my ass every day about stuff. And he would be like, you know what? He goes, you played football in college. He goes, in the NFL, you learn football. And that's kind of stuck with me throughout my whole career. Because at first, I kind of just took it like, yeah, he's just, you know, being Dorsey, like, you know, joking around. And it finally hit me one day, like, you know, this is, you know, something I really need to take serious.
You became a student of the game.
Yes.
At that point.
Yeah, he started breaking down more film, you know, trying to help out the best I could. I mean, I'm the third string at the time, and so you're not getting reps in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sitting back watching football.
Analyzing.
Watching football practice, going home, breaking down film, and then going to the game. You're basically a fan at that point.
Yeah.
But you got to stay mentally ready because, I mean, one snap, you could be the next man up. You're always one snap away in the NFL. So you always got to be mentally prepared.
How hard is it to be locked into those games knowing like that, you know, okay, more than likely I'm not going to get into this game, like, but I have to stay ready. Like, was it hard to stay locked in?
So like it would, the whole week, like you go on, like you got to be mentally prepared.
Uh-huh.
And then Saturday, the night before the game, you're still locked in, ready to go. Then Sunday they announce who's active and who's not. As a third string quarterback, you're normally not active.
Uh-huh.
And so once they tell you you're not active, your mind not necessarily shuts off, but it kind of, you know, settles down relaxes a little bit. You're not, you know, there's no chance you're going in the game. Like everybody on the field could pass out and you're still not going in the game. So it was kind of like staying ready. Okay. You're not active this week. Okay. I can sit back. Now let's focus on what the defense is doing. You know, let's try to get tells from, you know, their sideline. Maybe they're signaling something. Maybe you can help out the offense with one of their defensive signals. Hey, you know, they signaled this. This is what they're running on defense. And so you kind of have to transform from offensive side of the ball to the defensive side of the ball.
Wow.
Was there ever times that kind of, you know, sitting back, you know, learning and stuff, but you felt like you're like, dang, man, I should be in there right now getting that job done type thing. I'm trying to think of the word. I'm blanking on the word. I was.
Are you just pretty much just trying to say, like, did you ever feel like you should be that man? Like, you should be that guy out there? Is that what you're saying?
Kind of, yeah. I guess we go with that, yeah. We can go with that.
I mean, we're all competitors.
Right.
So you want to compete at the highest level. You always want to be that guy. You go from high school to college where you're that guy on the team. You're the leader. You're the guy stepping in the huddle. You're the guy playing on, you know, Fridays and Saturdays. Like, you're that guy you're the third string now. And you're not even suiting up on game days. So that mentally kind of messes with you for a while. But just being a competitor, you always got to think, like, I can do that. Like, I can do what he's doing on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though the coaches don't think that and people don't think, like, I know I can do it.
Right.
So you kind of have that personal self, like, hey, I can do it. But at the same time, like, you're not stepping on the field.
And it helps you grow, too, as, you know, a lot through adversity, a certain type of adversity, you know what I mean?
Because if you sit back and you're just like, I can't do this, yeah. You pout, walk around with your head down. I mean, you're going to be out of the building quick.
Did you see that in guys? Like, did that happen? You just see guys mope around, you know, and they're out?
You would see guys that would, you know, do the, oh, I should be out there, but weren't doing the things to be out there. And they were very vocal, like, the guy starting guy would mess up and they'd be like, oh, if I was out there, I would have done this. And that, I mean, that doesn't help anybody.
No, it doesn't, yeah.
Like, sitting there and, you know, we call it clicker pimping. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting in the room on Monday and you're watching the game and you're like, oh, why didn't you throw here? Or, oh, I would have done this. Like, who knows what you would have done? You're in a, you know, 70-degree room, nobody rushing you. J.J. Watt's not coming after you. You know, guys like that. And so, I mean, it's easy to sit back and do that, but to actually go in the game with bullets flying, it's a lot different.
You've watched guys like Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes, Trubisky. After seeing all those guys and all your experience in college and the NFL, what would you say makes a good quarterback nowadays? Like, all the little tips and tricks, how you're saying that you're a student of the game, you've always you've learned to analyze things, you've picked things. What makes a good quarterback in today's age?
That's difficult because, a lot of the younger guys now, they got insane arm talent. So the arm talent nowadays is a lot different than, you know, back in the day. And so, like, the Mahomes is throwing, you know, 80 yards in warm-ups and stuff like that. I mean, just slinging the ball. But you also have guys like Aaron Rodgers that can do that. So I think what separates them is kind of the mental aspect. Because if you're in the NFL, you can throw the ball. Like, you didn't get in the NFL because you can't throw. Like, you're a quarterback. That's what you do. So being able to dissect a defense, though, and know what they're going to do before the ball snapped. I mean, things might change a little bit once the ball snapped. You got to react. But mentally knowing, like, hey, you know, this linebacker scooted over a little bit. I know that safety's coming down.
Right.
So I know this backside, I can rip a slant. Little things like that, just knowing what the defense is going to do before they actually do it. If you got a quarterback that can do that, he's going to win a lot of ball games. Mm-hmm. That's why Tom Brady's won, what, 7 Super Bowls or whatever it is, 6 or 7? Because he knows what the defense is going to do before they even know what they're going to do.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
Yeah, that is very, very true. Now, you're starting to do, like, lessons yourself, right?
Yeah, so I teamed up with Greg and started doing some of the South Valley stuff. Kind of haven't really wanted to fully go into that because I'm still trying to play myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 29, I'm still young, and I still feel like I can play at a high level. And so I don't want to fully just kind of quit my career and start a new one.
Right.
And so I've been doing lessons here and there with some of the Kingsburg kids. But I've been still working out with Greg, still trying to get myself mentally and physically ready for that. Mm-hmm. And so kind of put the lessons on, not the back burner, but kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the back. It's a good idea, or any idea you could always come back to. No matter if you start it, you can put it off to the side. It may suck, right? Big kind of, but you could always come back to it. That's what I've learned. I've come back to many ideas, like podcasts. Like this exact podcast was an idea way back in the past. So I was like, yeah, okay. And I just came back to it. So you could always come back to that.
Yeah.
But I mean, 29, dude, you just go get it. You're smart enough to do it too. Like, dude, from just talking to you for the last 55 minutes, bro, like this is where you separate yourself from other
quarterbacks. That wasn't always the case. I finally had to kind of snap into it. But I go out, Greg will train guys, and I'll go out there and throw with them.
Yeah.
I see and that all the time. I talk to the younger guys what to do, what to shy away from, because I've lived it already.
Right.
I've done it, you know, I've been in the lows and I've been in the highs. And so kind of trying to teach the young guys coming up, like, hey, this is what you need to be doing. Like, I know we're out here training and, you know, no one's around, no one's doing this, but, you know, take this shit seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, you're paying money to do this lesson. You should be tired mentally and physically after it. You should hurt after every lesson. You shouldn't be here. You know, it's okay to have fun, but you shouldn't be smiling and joking around the whole time.
Entitlement is what today's kids. Yeah, I see myself all the time. I mean, it's just the day and age that we grew up. I think it just feels like everything's so entitled to us.
Well, it's a bunch of the social media. You got all these electronics nowadays, the Xboxes, all that. Like when I was growing up, I had an Xbox. My dad worked in marketing for a casino. And so he would get gifts. And so we had an Xbox. But we also had a basketball hoop outside. And I had a brother that's a year and a half younger. So we weren't sitting there playing, you know, Call of Duty and stuff like that, or Fortnite till 3 o'clock in the morning. We were playing basketball 1v1, almost fist fighting each other every night until my mom would come outside and be like, hey, like it's 9 o'clock. Like you guys need to come inside. See, like the street lights would be on.
Yep.
Barely able to see the ball. And you're just duking it out with your brother in the front yard or to the neighborhood kids or whatever. We weren't playing video games. We didn't have cell phones.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I have a 17-year-old brother who got a cell phone in like the sixth grade or something like that. Something ridiculous. And I remember like going to my parents and like, what the hell is this? I got one for my eighth grade graduation. I had a little Razor flip phone.
Yeah. Entitlement, I'm telling you.
I was like, and I got that because I graduated eighth grade, not like it was, you know, the hardest thing, but I mean, I got it because I was going into high school and you guys needed to track where I was at. Yeah. Like, it wasn't for me to have a cell phone because everyone else had a cell phone.
Yeah,
so they knew where I was at. And so I think just nowadays, everyone's so focused on, you know, how do I look on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Hey, when I'm dropping back, do I look, you know, cute? Do I look cool dropping back and doing all these little jump throws and stuff like that?
Right.
And so it's not the same grind anymore.
Mm-mm. Do you say that it's important if you're trying to play football at the next level? Do you think it's important to have a quarterback coach?
Yes.
Yeah.
If I would have had the training from when I was little, for the mental aspect of football, the footwork stuff and all that, that's going to come because obviously you go through growth spurts. And so, I mean, I was 6'2" as a freshman. And then all of a sudden I was like 6'6" as a sophomore.
Oh, wow.
So I was very Bambi-ish with my legs. So doing footwork and stuff, I was going through a huge change. So, I mean, it would have helped tremendously.
Oh,
we got a guest. We got a guest on the podcast.
That's awesome. Do we know this cat's name?
We don't.
I've never even seen a cat in the barn before. It's
the outside cat, man. We gotta get her off.
Yeah, she'll get out of here, or she'll just sit right in plain view. All right, we'll be right back, guys. All right, we're back. But Tyler was just talking about how kids nowadays need quarterback coaches. So truly, you think in today's age it is important for someone to mentor you and like always kind of like build that mental strength?
Yeah, because you got to think, other kids around the nation, they have QB coaches.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if you're not doing what everybody else is doing or doing more than what they're doing, they're going to pass you. You got to work harder than the guy ahead of you and the guy ahead of him. So you always got to not compete just against yourself, but you're competing against other people in the nation.
Okay. How do you feel about transferring to another school to create an opportunity for yourself?
Depends on why you're transferring. Some kids transfer because they got beat out and they think they weren't given a fair deal. And there's kids that transfer because, you know, maybe the coach didn't like them, something like that, or the offense didn't fit them. There's certain reasons why you should and shouldn't.
Right.
So, like, if it's a, like, let's say, you know, they're a running offense and all you're going to do is hand the ball off, but you're a guy that can throw, you know, the crap out of the ball. Why would you stay in that running offense where you're not getting to showcase that? I mean, so, very rarely does it, you know, work out. Alex Smith, for example, he went to Helix High. His running back, Reggie Bush.
Yep.
So if you're not handing Reggie Bush the ball 30 times a game, it's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, number one pick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have a number one pick as your quarterback, and he's handing the ball off a bunch of times and throwing maybe 15 times a game.
Yeah.
So there's certain instances where, I mean, it's not going to work out for you just based on the talent around you. But I mean, if you're a guy that can go out and sling the ball and the coaching staff isn't going to adapt to that, then yeah, I would say transfer to a school that's going to showcase your talent.
How would you feel about a kid transferring to a school? Let's say his clientele, right? His receivers weren't top notch up to his level and he was like an elite QB. How do you feel about him transferring to a school where he has an elite wide receivers? And
yeah, I mean, it's almost like the super teams in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
Like, you might not have those certain pieces around you that are going to make you good. Well, let's go and either bring them here or go to the team that does. So, I mean, there's certain factors that go into it. Because if you're at a smaller school, but you're a guy that could play, you know, at the next level or the next two levels, like, you need to probably surround yourself with guys that, you know, can handle you throwing. Because if you're out there throwing slant routes and it's just like, you know, spatula hands, and they're just batting it up to the defense, and you're getting two picks a game, three picks a game because of that. I mean, obviously the college coaches are going to see, like, you don't have the talent around you that you probably need, but at the same time,
it makes it harder. Yeah,
because you start adapting and changing what you're doing, which is just hurting yourself.
Yeah, iron sharpens iron, right?
Yeah,
iron sharpens iron.
Because I mean, I tried.
Yeah,
I had some like a QB thing and high school where I was getting recruited and I show up and I thought I was going to transfer schools. And so I was thinking about going to Edison.
Mm-hmm.
And that's back when they had the McDonald brothers,
yep,
all those guys, Rolando Jefferson, all that. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to go there and we're just going to blow everybody out. Well, CIF kind of stepped in and was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. And so we had gotten recruited a little bit by Clovis West. Thought about going there for a little bit and this ended up sticking with Kingsburg and, you know, winning some games there.
I mean, solid season. I mean,
yeah.
I do you think that if you had a transfer, you would have that same season?
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Because, I mean, we never got to play. Like, Kingsburg just played Buchanan. Like, we never got to play any of the big schools up in Fresno.
True.
I think we could have hung with them.
Right.
I don't know if we would have beat them, but I think we would have given them a run for their money. Because, yeah. I mean, our offense was pretty good and our defense was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, before we close out, Luke, do you have anything left to say? Or anything like that?
No, I only got one question. What's it like having those defensive guys running at you?
It's not in the back of your head. You've been doing it for so long that, you know they're there, but you can't sit there and flinch. You sit there and flinch and you're going to see it on film. So like,
I'm just saying in the fact of like, are they really as quick as people talk about? Cause like,
you have DNs these days running like right. 4.4s and 4.5s. Yeah. Like I ran a five flat.
Yeah.
I'm not getting away from any of those guys. Exactly. I mean, you can make quick little moves in the pocket to help your offensive alignment, which is kind of where my game got to because I knew I wasn't going to outrun anybody.
Right.
I wasn't going to Lamar Jackson anybody and, you know, scramble out and run for 20.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen. I know that. But I knew if I was quick enough to, you know, step up and move to the right, step up, move to the left, get the ball out quick.
Yeah.
So I transferred my game into that and it kept me from getting hit.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I mean, Tyler, thank you for coming on today.
Oh,
I
appreciate thank you, guys. You,
man. Luke, I mean, dude, back to back. I mean, 13 freaking Tuesdays in a row, dude. What's crazy about this whole thing is the purpose behind Guys Being Dudes is to bring on guys like you, like our guests, and have the viewers listen to their story, listen to what they've done in this life. Like, we're not bringing on guests that honestly, don't have something going for them, right? Like, they these guys, we're bringing them on for you guys to learn. And Tyler, man, you exceptional. Way to steal the show again. Guys being dudes, we continue to get it done. But thank you for coming on, man. Is there anything left to say that you have to the viewers or anything? Maybe to some kids at home?
Anybody in the South Valley needing training, let me know. Hit me up on my Instagram.
I'll put his Instagram down below in the description of the video. But guys, that was episode 13. Thank you guys for listening and watching Guys Being Dudes. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, if you're a visual learner, then YouTube. But guys, episode 13, we're out. Peace.